Hello, hello. Thanks for listening to Guidance Counselor 2.0. Listen, I want to give you a quick rundown of what this podcast is and what you're about to get into as you listen to these episodes. We had guidance counselors in middle school. We had guidance counselors in high school, but we didn't really have guidance counselors in college. And now as professionals, we don't really have anybody to turn to ask a quick question, to learn something about the job search or to navigate your career. And so that is what I want this podcast to be for you. I want it to be a tool for you to navigate the job search and your career. So that being said, I hope you enjoy this episode. And if you need to reach me, Taylor@vaco.com is how to get in touch with me. Old fashioned email, social media at TDESSEYN. And finally, please rate and review this in the App Store because I want this to be discoverable for others so they can navigate their careers. Hope you enjoy the episode.
Dan, give the people what they want. Who are you? What do you do? And we'll go from there.
I kind of want to like start out by saying I'm a LaCroix sponsor. So eventually they actually sponsor me like you did with yours.
LaCroix.
So LaCroix, if you're watching.
powered by LaCroix and black coffee.
So my name is Dan DeGangi. I'm an engineering manager at DocuSign. I work out of Chicago, but I do work remote for a hot minute now. My background's in the UX UI space, which is in engineering. So I've been doing JavaScript since I had way less gray hair. I'm super passionate about the UX UI space, hiring, onboarding. I've designed a lot of hiring and onboarding. So you and I always have a great alignment. You know, it's definitely something I'm super passionate about.
Yep. I love it. And then we have Kenya in the house today. Moses, thanks for joining. We are international this morning. I love it. So Dan, let's dive in because I know 30 minutes goes by really fast, especially when you and I get together because we like to talk. So the first part is negotiations, right? And so one of the things I've really been thoughtful about lately is the fact that I'm a salesperson, right? At the end of the day, recruiters are salespeople. That's why most people hate us. I'm a salesperson and I still struggle with negotiations, right? Like when I'm on client calls trying to get new clients, I still get weird, right? I get weird negotiating fees and contract terms and stuff, right? And so I sat back for a second. I was like, man, if I struggle with this, can you imagine what a normal job seeker is struggling with when it comes to this stuff? And so that's why I want to start to unpack this. And so I just want to kick it off super high level. What are just some general tips for negotiations, especially with you and kind of your thoughts? Again, no wrong answers here, but if somebody is in negotiations with you, give me some general thoughts and comments on just the negotiation process in general.
Sure. So I think the thing you mentioned with everyone getting kind of weird or uppity on both sides of the table is it's money, it's compensation. Correct. We'd love to say it's not the big deal, but it is, right? It's the thing that you need money to, you know, survive and keep going. Yeah. And so the first thing I'd always say is that, you know, don't be intimidated regardless of the side of the table you're on. Everyone knows this is part of the game. It's a piece of it. It has to happen. Right. So there's a few things that I'd say come to mind for me. So first is as long as you're not wildly out of place or wildly over the top, there's really no wrong thing you can do almost with an asterisk there, of course.
Sure. Right? Yeah. Like don't be a jerk.
Oh no, I need $1 million a year. Like, okay, if you're applying to some startup that doesn't have even $1 million, like you have to be realistic and reasonable, but it's okay to negotiate. Like just start out by putting yourself in that mode that it's okay to negotiate within reason. One thing to know up front, and Taylor, I was, you know, keep me honest here. Every experience I've had with usually recruiter calls in the beginning is it's one to make sure you're not an absolute crazy person. But the second is to align compensation, right? So make sure you're in the ballpark and one, you understand like what is your role worth in the market? What is this company willing to pay for the role? And where do you fit as far as your experience and skill set goes within that compensation, right? And so the thing that like most immediate tip that I always think of is what I see a lot is, so the most common is, right, like I want 100 grand, but I'm used to getting 80 grand. So I ask for 120 so that I can get the 100, right? Like that's the most common way that everyone goes about it, right? What I see happen though is that someone would be like, Taylor, I need that 100 grand. Okay, cool. Why? And no one says the actual like reason. Like if you're gonna try and say that like, hey, I should be paid this much.
Sure.
You got to negotiate with grounding. Like, why should you? Like, is it the market rate? Is it your skill set? Is there something that sets you apart? Are you differentiated?
I love that.
Like, you have to establish that clear line in order to even get it.
So I had for those of you who are watching a few episodes back, I had from TikTok Dan from HR. So if you go to TikTok, Dan_from_HR, I like him. He is very brash and I love brash. He actually came down to one of my videos and kind of picked it apart. And I said, "Ooh, I love this. Let's bring him on." What he talked about, so I was really big on like, hey, doing salary.com or Glassdoor and comparing salaries. And he was like, listen, at the end of the day, like market research doesn't really hold anything in negotiations. He was like, you need to talk about what you're bringing to the table, right? Like, what is your background? It's just like Dan said, like, what makes you stand out, right? And Dan, so let me ask you this, like what would be a good answer? Like, hey, Dan, you know, like, listen, I have an AWS Lambda cert. I've been working in AWS for a lot of years. I know y'all said y'all struggling with trying to find an AWS resource. So that's why I think I'm worth it. Is that good? Like, is that something that you would like to hear?
It could be. I mean, you got to think context, right? Like, right. You know, what is like you said, so what I like what you said there is what are the problems that they're facing? Is it just, yeah. Hey, we need to hire someone and this is something to be helpful? Or if it's like, hey, we're struggling in an area. Those are like leverage points that you can use as someone trying to get a job to establish the value and put yourself in the best position to get the job and the compensation you want. So make those things clear. Or like an interesting thing I see some people do, and I don't even realize it, is they'll be like, I'll have some job description, right? And they'll be like, well, hey, based on that and what we interviewed, it's like what I see is you're going to need this and this, and here's why, and here's how I fit into that picture. So you're even looking a little bit wider and deeper than I might be to say like, hey, this is how these kind of combine together to make me even a better person potentially to fit, you know, for you and vice versa. And when people say that, it's almost like, so one of the things I do with my team when we go through your reviews, yeah, is like, hey, everybody write down your accomplishments, what you're doing, you push the needle forward so that when they come into the conversation for review and compensation, it's not this like, kind of like, well, why kind of thing. It's, yeah, like, no, here's clear evidence. Here's good reasoning. I thought through it. Here's why. That makes the conversation very easy, or much easier, just like you can in negotiation. And I think about that a lot from both sides of the table. And I've been on both sides.
Yeah. Dan from HR again, he's the only other negotiation talk I've had. So I guess I've only had one, Dan. I thought I had more than that. But basically he was saying to bring up points in the interview. He was like, listen, like y'all talked. So for example, we just got a new client. My team just got a new client, fully remote client. And they were like, hey, this role's been open for a year. And like, listen, like I don't know if that's something to necessarily bring up. No. Okay. Okay. Good.
Don't do that.
Good. Good.
Let me put it this way. It's like kind of a turnoff to me, but here's the thing is like, I could, you know, when I use a line like that, when I'm buying watches, when I'm buying cars, when I do stuff like that, like that's a point of leverage I'll use for those types of things.
Sure.
But using that on somebody for a job.
Okay. That's good.
Not the route that I would go. I don't think that's. Like that's weird to me. It's like, hey, you're desperate. You should hire me. Like, do you really want that to be the way you project yourself and why you should get hired?
That's true. Yeah. But, and then also too, but again, bringing up stuff during the interview process, right? So going backtrack a little bit, what we just said,
yeah,
listening to key things, right? Maybe they're needing Shopify experience and you bring a wealth of Shopify. And this is a really important role for a project that they need to stand up, right? Tying that into negotiations, I think is incredibly important. Elliot comes in here. I've been talking with a lot of recruiters and collecting figures in the market and brand names to interview with. I've talked to Nintendo recently. I'm final stages with a lesser known company. I can legit back it up for my talks with recruiters. Yeah. I mean, listen, I talk about this all the time. I think if you want a starting point, I don't know. Again, I love where Elliot's coming from in a sense of knowing his worth. Again, I wouldn't bring this up in negotiations because this is kind of what we're talking about market worth. You know, you can't sit, I mean, Dan, I'm interested in your thoughts, but if I interview with you, like, and I'm gonna be like, well, Nintendo is giving me this. You're like, I don't really care about Nintendo. Right.
That honestly. So I get Elliot what you mean too. And there's only one place in my opinion that really works, or one in two places. And it's when you talk big tech and FANG, or companies that pay at the level of the big tech companies,
right?
Because that's what engineers especially do. They jump around. Like, I go to Facebook, so I'll jump to Google. Well, Facebook paid me this. Like, that happens a lot.
Yeah.
But you got to remember, like, that's the notoriety, you know, but that is not the full circle of the market. That's right. One large, small area of it, if you know what I mean. And it, yeah, works a lot and a little bit differently inside of there. So you don't want to use that as, again, to me, that's that same thing you said about that desperate kind of line. And I don't mean this is desperate. What I mean is it's like, is that the way you want to project it? Is like, hey, well, they're going to do this. Like, yes, you can leverage an offer to get more money potentially, but you don't want to make it as like, well, why won't you do that? Like, how come you're not like that? Like,
that's all that tonality. It's all tonality, in how you present it.
Yeah. And just be careful. And again, that's why I say like context matters. So like, you know, one thing may work here and one thing may not work here. That's why as you go through interviews and processes, you got to like understand like maybe what you thought you were going to do at the beginning, if you got to this stage and where you're, if you're there now, it might not be the same thing anymore based on what you learned and what you know or the offer you got. And you have to always keep that in mind. Be very dynamic in how you go through these processes and where you're going to land.
Right. And then Elliot said this, I talked to my external recruiter that got me, and that's fantastic. And I like your approach, Elliot, in digging into the recruiter, because I think digging into a recruiter is different than digging into Dan during an offer stage, because recruiters, like we can hack it, right? Like if you come at us and you're like, listen, like in my team deals with this too, right? Like I said, I think I've told the story before. We got an offer for a data engineer. Their company countered 100K in total comp, not just salary, like total comp 100K. And literally like the candidate was like, listen, like this is, I need to get to a certain threshold from a salary to even make it justifiable. I'm fine with that. I think like what we talked about, I think going back and saying like going to Dan and being like, hey, I interviewed at Nintendo. This is what they gave me. Dan's probably like, great, we're not Nintendo, so you need to go take the Nintendo offer, right? That's probably how the conversation would play out.
I would, that's not how every company is going to act though. Right. Like, again, that's why you got to feel these situations out. You got to understand the recruiter, the hiring manager. Right. It all is going to be very dependent and contextual.
Do you like counters? Do you like when people counter? Is that something that you like to see? Well, because here's my, I want to hear your thoughts and then I'll add some color. What I've heard from other managers.
I mean, I don't have an issue with it. What I don't like is when someone tries to overdo it. Like, you know, again, if like I have a job that pays 100 grand and you're like, hey, I need 400 grand because I worked at Google. And like, okay, I get that. But like, I can't do that. Like, I don't have that ability. So like, come at me with something realistic if you really want to negotiate. Right. But, you know, don't throw the entire ocean at me. Like, right. I can't do that. Plus, you know, like... here's what I would say. This, when you asked me earlier about initial tips, so I'd say is it never hurts within reason to ask for more or to counter. So don't be scared to do it. And what I can say, at least in my opinion, what I've done, unless it's again unreasonable, I'm not going to say, no, you can't get this offer because you asked for more money. It's when you do something wild and over the top that I might be like, hey, this alignment's not there, but asking for 20 grand or 30 grand more, like, sure, let's have the conversation. Right. It's okay.
Yeah,
I'm not going to pull the offer.
Yeah. Well, so I think that's big though, right? I've had pre-COVID, I've had companies pull offers.
That's weird to me. I really don't get that.
I think that's a red flag with culture. I just think that's a red flag with culture.
It is. It's really strange to me that you wouldn't like be like, hey, yes, why wouldn't somebody try and give it the word? Especially if like, this is a whole nother topic on its own, but especially knowing that not everybody gets paid the same, not everybody gets paid fairly, depending on who and where you come from. And like, there's so much in there that's unpacked and that can, anyways, it's a whole nother conversation.
That is.
It's wild to me that someone would not think that. You shouldn't counter. We're amazing. You should take what we give you. Like, ew, gross. Yeah. That's a horrible way to think about it.
Yeah, I love that. And that was a great soundbite. I can't wait to get that soundbite just then. But yeah, I mean, I think the thing is too, I think as a manager, you know, you want, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think managers, I think the good ones out there want people who are comfortable with pushback, right? Because at the end of the day, like, you know, as a manager myself, I want people to challenge my ideas. I don't want people to sit in these Zoom calls going, It's like, no, like, let's have a conversation. And in my perspective, if you can tactfully do a counter, I think that may even like be more exciting to the manager. Be like, oh, wow, this person can like push back, is confident, and is very articulate. Like, I'm super excited for this person.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, this goes both ways too. You have to be willing to walk away. And again, that goes for both sides of the table. Sometimes you're not going to get it, or you're just wasting time in a conversation that's not going to go. You still should fight for it and do it the right way. But at some point, you're going to have to walk, or they're going to walk. That is just the nature of how it goes at some point.
Yeah. And I think too, again, I mean, I've talked about knowing your worth and not just what the market is, but knowing what you're getting paid currently. Like, and I'm talking about monthly benefit cost, 401k match, HSA match if you get it, PTO, salary, bone. I mean, like, really kind of go through the check mark to know what you're worth, because I see a lot of people get so caught up on just salaries. We have one company in Nashville who pays well, but their benefits are terrible. So you kind of have to ask for another 20 grand more. And so, Dan, do you guys, are y'all chill about giving out benefit information kind of early on? Is that something?
Yeah. And DocuSign in particular. So one of the reasons I picked DocuSign was that the benefits outside compensation are wildly good. Like I think I said this in the first one, they really do actually, like, it's not empty words when they say they care about their employees at DocuSign. So, like, right. We get random days off for COVID. I don't pay with no dependents. I paid nothing for my insurance.
Yeah.
Phone bills covered. So, like, those things, they add up. Like, I was paying $80 a month at my last job, and it's not that bad, but it's still $80 a month that I'm not taking in that I could be saving or whatever I need to do with my money. You know,
absolutely.
That stuff matters quite a bit.
Absolutely. All right. So we're halfway through, and then that flew by again. We're just hitting surface stuff, but I want to move on to onboarding because I think a lot of companies don't do it well. I don't think anyone does it. I mean, I think very few people probably do it really well. But, you know, Dan, I'm interested to hear your thoughts. One, do you think y'all do onboarding well? And if not, what are some major glaring points? And if you think you do it well, maybe kind of give your secret sauce.
So I think where I'm at with DocuSign and the CLM product, I think there is some things we do really well, but I do think, and I feel confident that others within the org would say, it is an area that we want to be growing in and do a lot better. Like, I can say, if I look back, so I'm coming up on my 2-year mark at DocuSign. And if I look at from the first person I hired, this guy Priyank, who's on my team, I'm an awesome guy. It was a long and lengthy onboarding process, and it took his time, but basically he, like, documented and went through it. He shared the feedback. And I just had someone start recently, and the guy before as well, that it went super smooth. It went very fast. They were getting stuff into committed in code within the first 2 weeks. For us, that's normal because we have a computer set up. So it's definitely an area we're getting better at. But I would say what's really important is, what are the most important things that are going to get them up and moving first? And that's where you want to focus. So what I mean specifically, though, is, yeah, you got to set your computer up and you got to learn the GitHub and stuff. But, like, the place that we start is, do you know about your team, about the product? Do you understand what the company? So, like, for DocuSign, it's the agreement cloud is the big thing that we're trying to push. Okay, cool. Now, what about CLM's role within that? Cool. Now, what about your team's role? What about your role? And you get this nice stepped effect. You really understand where you fit into the picture. And to me, once you start seeing that, you're going to be a lot more effective. Then all the code stuff and computer setup, because that doesn't, yeah, you can code, but that doesn't really change that much at the companies. But knowing how you fit in and what you're trying to achieve, that does. And that is one of the most important things to get up front.
How long do y'all take to get somebody? How long does it take to get a developer kind of up and running? And I know it's going to vary between each team, but what's kind of the average? Because I'm curious, right? Just even as a recruiter, I mean, I've heard it takes 6 months for a developer to be, like, truly, like, producing. But then, like I said, I mentioned off air that Etsy has this onboarding process where you're, like, deploying to production for day one. So I don't know what to believe.
Yeah. So I'll never forget this. One of my bosses at CLM, Keith Littman, when I first started the first day, he's like, listen, Dan, I'm going to be honest with you. Like, it's going to be 3 months before you can legitimately contribute. And it's going to be a year before it's, like, big contribution. He doesn't mean you're not doing work. What he means is that there is so much product and so much domain knowledge to learn that you can't just be up to speed and full in 3 months. Like even now, 2 years in, I know I'm very dangerous in a good way with what I know. But there's a lot more field to run to try and get to learn this product and our customers and everything. So that's from, again, just getting that domain. But, like, for our actual, like, more low-level tactical. So we right now are shooting for within the first 1 to 2 weeks, your computer is up and set up, your local machine. It's a remote type thing. And then we want you submitting a piece of code in the next sprint, your second sprint, basically.
In the first month.
Basically, nothing critical, though. Obviously, we don't want to put you in the fire line if something important. But I can say the last two people I hired, they took on a critical piece of work, both in the first sprint that they committed in that first sprint, because they went so fast and they did so well. And part of that was because our onboarding process is getting better and better.
Yeah. What is like, what's kind of the key to get people up? Like, if there's a tip that you could give to companies right now, Is it documentation just to get developers up and running, like you just said, quickly, because you've done it now twice with your team? Like, what's changed? Or maybe you just hired two rock stars, but I'm kind of curious if you have any advice for companies.
So I think the first most important thing, it's not just one thing. And I think I said this in the last time we talked, everyone thinks very like day and night type of thing. It's not just one or another. So like, we do have documentation. It's better. We know the things we need to do and we have it documented. Cool. We have other documentation that just guides you through things. Cause right, what you have to remember is when you set up an onboarding partner, their time is being spent there and that is what we want. But you know, you ever hear like, hey, you're new, go and Google stuff and try and figure it out yourself. Documentation is meant to try and short term some of those things. Right. And then the other thing too, is like, we had this, internal technical writer who redid the documentation on the computer setup, works fantastically better now. But all these little things are starting to add up and they're compounding is really what we're trying to create. Right. And I've gotten better at it. My team, I always ask a new person, give feedback to your company, what's good, what's bad, what's slow, what's fast, and build that in. So the next time someone comes in again, compound build.
I love that. I love that a lot. What's maybe some things that have been glaring, maybe one thing that's been glaring in your onboarding process that you really have tried to address recently?
Ooh, that's a good question.
It may not be glaring, but just more, just kind of a bump in the road.
I would say that it probably has for us been our local developer setup. There's a bit of time involved to get our computers where they need to be because of the complexity of our application. Like, we have a mono repo. So it's just, there's a lot more things to be able to be ready to go. So having the documentation and making that more efficient has been for us one of the bigger pain points that we've had to solve.
That makes sense. That makes sense. I want to get to two comments that came in. Barrett, this is going back to negotiations and knowing your worth. Worth is more financial. Got to consider your cost of personal sanity as well. And I want to talk about this for a second. Go back to a little bit of know your worth here. I've talked to so many developers recently that are actually happy in a non-stressful role because they've developed side hustles over COVID and they want to continue to do the side hustles over, like, as the world's opening back up. And so I will tell you this, if you just want to go get bread, as I say, and just go get paid and you don't have a side hustle, like, just go. I'm cool with that. But I've talked to two individuals recently in the last at least 3 months that have been like, you know what? I'm happy where I'm at. Could I make more money? Maybe. But this job allows me like the sanity to be able to go do my side hustle, which we don't talk about that enough. That at the end of the day, you don't have to have a job that burns you out. You need a job that gives you some work-life balance. But some people like the grind and I respect that. But Dan,
it's do what's best for you. And yes, absolutely. Like, you might want something that maybe pays a little less, but you're far more happy or you're getting benefits. Like, you might just be like, hey, I really need great health insurance and I get paid less, but this company is awesome at that. And that's good for my family. Like,
correct.
That's okay. But we do need to say one thing though. And I've changed my tune on this. I personally think it's okay to also go after the money. Like, a lot of people are like, well, you got to, like, you know, you do what makes you happy. Like, yes, that's important, but
you got to get paid.
Why is it wrong to also be like, if we're saying it's up to you and what you want, like, why couldn't you also be someone that's like, yeah, I go for the money. If you do a bad job, like, yeah, maybe not then, but if it's okay to go and strive to make good compensation, there's nothing wrong with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Chris comes in and goes, documentation is great. So long as it's good, always have to be improving it. Listen, I'm not a developer, but that's one thing I keep hearing, kind of a consistent theme. I think the whole slow down to speed up, I think, is incredibly applicable in this situation. Side hustle for the win. I love it. Christina, it's good to see you. Elliot, what are the biggest things that the best successes in hiring are doing in your onboarding? What can be emulated by new hires? What are the biggest things that the best successes in hiring? So I guess the two people that you brought on that crushed it recently, how can new hires emulate them?
So the most, like, as far as like giving value back to the company, and I make this a very clear upfront expectation, is like, take notes, tell me what's working, what's not working. And then feed that back into, in this case, my guy Priyank, who is running our onboarding for my team. But make sure you send that stuff back, because the next person never gains the benefit if we don't know what's going on.
Right.
And I don't want to have to always like FBI style interview you to get every nut and grain out. Like, your job is to help improve that. So,
yeah.
You know, contribute on your own and know that those things are, you know, helpful. What else have they done? I think maybe two is they've been able to thrive in the ambiguity because there's a lot of stuff that, you know, even I don't know the answers to, but they're like, hey, like, I know this is overwhelming or can be, and there's a lot, but I'm going to sink my teeth in and try and figure you know what, actually, you know, one thing that's I can suggest to any side of the table, one of the upfront to do's I give every person that starts is go have a one-on-one with everybody on the team and that. Spend that 30 minutes, one, to start building some relationships, but two, to learn and see those things. And as they're getting bombarded with all this information and learning, I think that's one of the reasons they've been like wildly more successful is because they're getting so much, as much as it might be overwhelming at times, things to learn and know, because they're going and taking that into their onboarding to-do list type of thing. And it's making them a lot more effective.
I love that. And I encourage people to do the same thing too. I always say, listen, my way is not the highway. There are other people on my team who do it better than I do. So just meet with them, soak it up, take notes, ask questions. I love that. Chris, love it, like it or not, money makes the world go round. Absolutely. I love Elliot's comments here. Side hustle is a way to get the experience for your next role. You can get paid dirt in the side hustle and turn that into a 20K bump in your next role.
You know, you made me think of something with the side hustles, because I love it. Because I don't know, I do my conference, right? Like, that's my side hustle, the React conference here in Chicago, React Loop. Yeah. One thing that I've noticed, everybody knows, of course, Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk, they're billionaires. Everyone's like, well, I'm going to be a billionaire. Like, I don't know, for those of you that have a side hustle or want a side hustle, making an extra like $5,000 a year is tons of money still. Like, you don't have to make $1 billion a year. Like,
correct.
Make $5,000-$10,000 a year. And that's still a good amount of money. Like, that's what I do with my watch pipe hustle. And it's great. And I don't go nuts, but I love it. And I make some extra money. So I don't think it's got to be this crazy amount of money to bring up your compensation overall.
I love it. If people need watches, hit up. Yolanda, does more money come with not having a good work-life balance?
No. No, it can, though.
Right.
Like, it really depends. Like, I can tell you, so one of my mentors, he's an engineering manager at Netflix. Obviously, Netflix pays very well, actually higher than most. And he cuts it off at 5. He doesn't overwork. He's not stressed. He loves what he does. He loves his team. So you got to get to know the company. And maybe I'll say this, and Taylor, this is on the getting hired side of things, is that you do have to remember companies are trying to pitch you, and you're not going to see everything between the cracks until you get into the job. But that's how it goes. So you do your best through interviewing, questions, research, talking to others who work there. People know the industry. You try to uncover as much as you can so you can find out, am I going to be sacrificing those things if I go to this place, even if the money is really great?
Yep. I love that. So Dan, as we wrap up here again, time has flown by like it always does. Any last, encouraging words? We don't have to. Oh, we got a comment here. Connor, what's up, Connor? Best thing I did at my new role was schedule one-on-ones with all the ancillary team members I'd be more connected with in the future. Took detailed notes on everyone and feel so much more connected to the department as a company as a whole. Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, you have to take it upon yourself to get connected, right? I think I'm going to say this. I think there is a lot of responsibility that weighs on the hiring managers and the organization to make sure you feel accepted. But I also think that's like 60%. The other 40%, in my opinion, again, that could be way off, but the other 40%, in my opinion, really needs to be on you. What are you doing to get connected from day one? Dan, I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
Absolutely. If you think that it's all 100% your manager and the team that are going to get you onboarded, that you need to reset your own expectations. Like, that's part of your thing, is you have to get yourself engaged in learning to be successful. You get the tools from the company and your team and your manager, but that's far from the entire picture of it. So I'm 100% with you.
I love that. So Dan, any last comments, things, words of wisdom that you want to lead the people with as we wrap up here?
Sure. So I think, let me think here. So I think the things that really bubble quickly is, one, just don't be scared or intimidated by companies. Like, I know, Taylor, you're on the other side on this one, but
sure.
I will say this, companies they take advantage of the situation in the sense that it is money and they are in always some sort of leverage position, but don't be scared, be confident, know what you're worth. And don't be afraid to put yourself out there and try something. Just be reasonable about it. You know, don't go over the top and keep trying as well. Also too, like, last quick thing is, if you're interviewing at a lot of places or doing it just to practice, which you should totally do, practice the negotiation. If you get to an offer stage, figure out what it takes. How do you tweak? Oh, and Oh, what's that book by Chris Voss, the FBI negotiator?
I have no idea. I don't read books. So
you're on this one.
I think I know what you're talking about, though. You're not the first person that's brought this up.
I think it's Chris Voss. He's one of the FBI negotiators. He wrote a book on negotiating. Highly, highly advise you read it. Maybe Taylor could help me get the name after to share, but really advise reading that book for all of you.
I love it. I love it. Well, y'all, thanks again for hanging out with us today. So again, I'm off for the rest of the week. Go connect with Dan. Dan's a fantastic voice in all things hiring, and is a great resource. Again, just want to give another shout out, Render ATL. Go check it out. Use the code GC2-0. That's obviously Guidance Counselor 2.0. And I'll see you in June. Dan, thanks for hanging. Feel free to stay on for a quick minute. Y'all, thank you again for hanging out with us today, and I'll see y'all next week. Peace.
Hey, you did it. You listened to an entire episode, and I am very grateful because you know why? There's a lot of podcasts out there. There's a lot of episodes, and I myself rarely finish an entire episode. So I appreciate you so, so much for listening. Quick reminder, please rate and review this podcast in the App Store. I want this to be discoverable to others. And the only way that happens is if you take the time right now and rate and review it. Please, like right now. Unless you're driving, then don't do it. So thank you again. If you need to reach out to me, taylor@vaco.com or @tdestin on all social media handles. And I hope you have a fantastic day.